stay connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
You are now listening to Meridian Arts.
The story you're about to hear is true. It takes place in the wild world of rap and contains mature content that may not be appropriate for all audiences. Like N.W.A. said,
parental discretion's advised.
We had a little rivalry thing going on with them, too. But it was never nothing personal. I love those guys, man. Mikey, DJ Mike Ski, man, and his brother and stuff. Those guys, I think they could have made it big.
Peace, y'all. My name is Parker Edison. I'm an artist, and I'm fascinated by the impact of rap writers. Hip-hop's 50th anniversary yielded a ton of articles and interviews on the subject. Being the black rap nerd that I am, I started to notice that certain cities have something about their contribution that makes them unique. San Diego is one of those cities for a couple of reasons. I tapped in with some of those close friends I've been discussing rap with, and we put together this series to break it all down for you. I'm gonna map the whole thing out, but here's the deal. This isn't the history of hip-hop. This isn't a complete timeline, but it is what happened. We talk about the Titanic, we don't spend a lot of time talking about the other big boats out at the time. We highlight the important stuff, Jack, Rose, the glacier, right? Keep that in mind as you listen to this. This is about San Diego rap and the incredible way it got to where it is today. You ready? This is a San Diego story.
Stay connected to the world around you. KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
It's crazy because even J.O. Felony wanted to sign with Legion Records.
Unlike Vicious Beat Posse, who were touring nationally to make a name, South Bay's Legion of Doom were finding success as hometown heroes. Selling solid numbers in record stores, they even began to jumpstart up-and-comers.
But it was one of those deals where it was another record company, and then Legion Records, and there was another record company. They put together a showcase, and there was people who were singing, there was rappers, and that's where J.O. Felony came in. He was super young. Like, he was very, very, very young.
But he wouldn't break for like another few years, right?
Right. Because this is hip hop at its infancy.
The interviewing voice you hear in that clip is Chris Reyes of Platform Collection. He's another one of those tour mates I'm in a Denny's arguing about hip hop with at full volume after a show. Very few people know the sport of rap as thoroughly as Chris. He goes way back with Mike Ski, which is how we were able to get them for this interview.
Because you guys were down here, like, in the South Side. Do you remember what was happening with, like, Chicano rap?
Yeah.
Do you know who? Like, who was around that time?
Dude, the main ones. Lil One.
Yeah.
Night Owl, Royal T, Lil Rob. They were the main ones.
Hold up. Hey, Chris.
Huh.
I know some of the acts that he's talking about, but not all.
Yeah.
I remember hearing San Diego was one of the first cities using the phrase Chicano, like Chicano Park. But how does that play into the rap scene?
Man, the answer to that is really complex. San Diego's Chicano rap history runs all the way to the beginnings of the genre. We should probably first start with talking about what the term means. The term Chicano is rooted in a very deep and layered history and culture. The first use of the word was during the civil rights movement of the 1960s. Whether it was in the fields or in the barrios, being Chicano meant embracing your American and Mexican heritage, all while navigating the challenges of defining your own identity while simultaneously feeling like you don't belong. So you see, right from its very essence, being Chicano means dealing with being an outsider. And from what I've heard so far, that falls right in line with this very San Diego story.
It's a simple question, right? But it has a very multifaceted answer, and it's a very complex answer.
That's the homie Wise. He's an Oceanside resident and the host of the G-Funk Junkies podcast. Over the last few years, he's done a deep dive on West Coast G-Funk and gangster rap, and that inevitably led him to Chicano rap. I decided to ask him about its beginnings and how San Diego's connection to those beginnings might not be as advertised.
I'm based out of San Diego County, so I grew up in Oceanside. you ask people from LA, they'll tell you that they're the ones that created it. You know, they'll cite Kid Frost as an early example, and some will even say Spanish Fly from the Harvard area. The Legion of Doom in San Diego, what I would credit as some of the first Chicanos that were involved in hip hop going back to, you know, mid 80s, it's not necessarily what we would consider Chicano hip hop, right?
Boom. So LOD's the first.
Hold up, P. That's not what he said. Wheel that up real quick.
It's not necessarily what we would consider Chicano hip hop, right?
See, the key phrase there is necessarily. Sure, LOD members had Mexican roots, but the group focused heavy on the hip-hop part of the art, a la Run DMC, Sugar Hill Gang. And the public perception, especially at this time, saw Chicano rap mostly rooted to the neighborhoods. You know, gang rap. But I'll let Wise break it down a little bit more.
And so I always credit Night Owl, his debut album in 1994, as the jumping point for what was and is Chicano rap, because everything after that was Chicano rap by default, and everything before that got retrofitted into Chicano rap, if that makes sense.
Word? Yeah, man. Once again, San Diego is right there at the beginnings of something. Something big, too, man. Chicano rap ends up going all around the world. I mean, just look up Chicano rap in Japan. I mean, this thing touches the world, and it might have started right here in San Diego.
You know, Lighter Shade of Brown, Kid Frost, ALT, and that cohort of different rappers that came out of LA and the greater LA area, they were riding the wave of what I call Latino hip hop, right? Latino rap, which, yes, it's all semantics, and there's some intersectionality between what is Chicano rap and what is Latin hip hop. If you listen to the debut album by Night Owl from beginning to end, there is no mention of being Latino. There's no mention of being Hispanic. It's very specific to the either Mexican identity or the Chicano label, right? And so that's all you hear. And so it wasn't meant to be something that was casting a wide net, you know, saying like, hey, let me include everybody else into this. No, it was very direct and very specific.
Born Roman Corona in 1972, Mr. Night Owl, aka The Night Owl, aka Night Owl, made rap music focusing on the struggles of the Chicano reality, a reality often covered in the hard facts of the streets.
Night Owl was a real artist. The bringing it around, say you want to battle me, do you want to get down? They flip when I want to trip with my clip, shooting them down to the ground. Everybody knows that I got a gun that I'll never miss.
That's Mr. Little One, aka Little Uno, a bona fide San Diego and Chicano rap legend. So far in this series, you've heard a few people talk about how San Diego's rap influence might be bigger than the general public ever imagined. Now you ask, why is that relevant? Wise?
Just for people that are listening, it's a well-known fact to us in the underground that Little One was on the verge of getting signed to Ruthless Records with Eazy-E, but I don't think the rest of the world understands the significance of that, right? You know, he's always mentioned that Little One's debut, that album was meant to be released on Ruthless Records, you know? So when you listen to that, I mean, it's just the blood, sweat, and tears that were put into that, you know? And you can see that this was crafted to be a mainstream album. It just didn't get that benefit because of the untimely passing of Eazy-E, but, you know, that was meant for Ruthless Records.
San Diego artist, right there, shoulder to shoulder with some of the heavyweights of the culture. And these ones are Chicano. And with just a little research on the internet, you'll find numerous stories and even audio of Night Owl talking about his connection with Eazy-E and how him and Little Uno came very close to releasing their music under the Ruthless emblem. But that's another story. As far as the connections to the beginnings of Chicano rap, well,
Frost did create a masterpiece in This Is For The Raza.
True.
And he does say Chicano, and I'm brown and proud. Mm-hmm. So he did represent us. But I always think that there was a competitive argument in between Frost and Night Owl.
Wow.
You know, and I think because Frost had more of a platform and backing and record companies, you know, I think he was able to navigate a little bit more and expand a little bit more.
Because of where he was at?
Because of where he was at. You know, he was in Los Angeles.
And even though San Diego's Chicano rap wasn't getting that national attention like some of the bigger acts in the genre, it wasn't slowing down the hustle. It's San Diego, after all. You know how we get down.
We had to go and make it happen on our own, you know, by going to these swap meets and performing in these parking lots. But I mean, it ended up being so huge and so big that we didn't know anything about product placement or distribution. We didn't know anything about that. But I think that, you know, still, that barrier still exists now as far as not being accepted by. I have a huge record that I just did with Norman Carter of the Delphonics, and the name of the song is El Chicano. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, I have a history. I have millions of records sold. Mm-hmm. SoundScan and, you know, in the streets for over 2 decades. I've lived off my music
right
my entire life.
Right.
I had one job when I was a kid, and once in a decade came out, I never had a job again.
There hasn't been anybody like Little One before him or after him. Definitely one of my favorites, definitely in my top tier rappers in any genre, whether it's underground or mainstream, because you saw a lot of people trying to mimic his flow.
Little Uno is somewhat of an anomaly when it comes to Chicano rap. From the Sherman Heights neighborhood of San Diego, Uno has found a way to transcend neighborhood lines, push artistic boundaries, and even to this day with his Chicano Music Festival, he brings his people together. And that's saying something. Because truth be told, when you don't feel like you belong, you could use a leader that could show us why we're more alike than we think.
I have a story. I unite people. Mm-hmm. It's also a bridge between the black and the brown culture. Mm-hmm. NWEA was talking about the same thing. They were talking about what goes on in their neighborhood, which is no different about what was going on in our neighborhood. But I think at the end of the day, it's always something political. It's always something convenient. And it's always who's in position. And usually who's ever in position is going to dictate the final move.
The gatekeepers.
Mr. Little One and Night Owl are pillars of the Chicano rap movement. But ultimately, they are two stories in a very complex San Diego rap scene. And they are not alone. Chart-topping artists like Little Rob, powerhouse businessmen like Royal T, hometown heroes like Shadow and Aztec Tribe all played their role in stamping San Diego as one of Chicano rap's founding cities. The Chicano rap scene in San Diego is one of perseverance, pedigree, and an unwavering will to get exactly what you deserve. The fact is, the Chicano rap story is not a separate story at all. The very essence of Chicano rap is embedded in the San Diego rap story. You tell the story of one, you're telling the story of the other. Listen.
You know, Chicano rap isn't credited to one specific region, one specific time, or specific person that birthed it. It's all been a contribution of different aspects that everybody has laid a foundation on, right? It's like you can't say that the first brick that's laid down on a house is the actual house, right? It's a foundation of different bricks and everything coming together to make one building, right? And so I like that answer because it doesn't take away from everybody's contributions, because we've all been contributing.
Man, if that's not a San Diego story, I don't know what is. We've all been contributing.
Same hustle, different block, huh?
Man, this is getting good. Where are we going next?
Let's hop a trolley and head in the southeast.
Where?
After this break.
This season on Everybody's Doing It with Miss Lolly, I'm going to classes, workshops, and private venues designed to enrich and broaden our sexual horizons, and I'm taking you with me. I meet with an erotic mindfulness coach, get a pelvic floor exam, talk with new moms, and even put on my dancing shoes and take a beginning burlesque class, and much more. Find season 2 of Everybody's Doing It with Miss Lolly wherever you get your podcasts, and come join me in my search for fun and sexy adventures that are available to you.
Do you recall, was there a scene at that time, or was it just like sporadic acts floating around in that 88?
Factions. It was more like factions, but it was a scene. Okay. I mean, because, you know, when you think about it, you know, every little place had their little thing that they were doing. Mm-hmm. Whether you hear about it, you know, you might hear about it later. It was just weird because there was really no venue or It's not like now where you can stream stuff and mm-hmm. you know you can create almost anything out of nothing. Mm-hmm. But then to be heard was a big deal. Mm-hmm. You'd have to be in that particular area, like the South Bay guys playing South Bay music, but they're not playing everybody else's stuff. It's not their fault. They're just trying to break in.
Gotcha.
So I knew there was South Bay guys. I knew there was Crip guys doing their thing, and then it was, you know, some Skyline guys were doing some stuff, you know, Sendo Mafia stuff that was going on. So all these different factions. But yeah, it was a scene. You know, I don't know if you ever heard of the guy Gangsta Earn.
I have.
I actually did his biggest single, which is I'm That N-Word. So,
real name Ernest Alexander, Gangsta Earn was a San Diego rap celebrity, on par with and often compared to LA's Tukey Williams. Earn's street status is legendary.
Well, I was a hot producer at that time in Southeast San Diego. Mm-hmm. So he came to me and said, hey, man, I want you to do some tracks. So I ended up doing two tracks for him. One was called Legend and the other one was called I'm That N-Word. Mm-hmm. But so he came to me and he's like, I got this idea for something. And he wanted to use part of Ice Cube's thing and say, he said, I'm that something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I would cut all of that little pieces and your little sample and everything mm-hmm. else and made the track and it came in. Mm-hmm. Blew it away, man. And it's one of the biggest songs for him. Mm-hmm. You know, I could still play those songs to this day. If I'm doing one of those Element parties,
right,
I play that and they lose it. You know what I mean?
Ooh. Hey, hold on. Didn't Tin have something about Gangsta Earn and those recording sessions in the Frank Z interview?
I think so. Let me check.
You know who DJ Gill is? Have you heard of DJ Gill?
Yes, sir. Vicious Beat Posse.
I did this record for him called Up Against It, which I don't know. I guess it's kind of an anthem.
All the great things you've heard about are true.
That was my version of West Coast hip hop.
Now the chase is on, guess who's on the market? You know what time it is, Gangsta Earn's a target. Warned, they're not alive. Everyone up in the zone, swole, strapped and dangerous.
Now, if you want to know who Gangsta Earn is, he's every sense of the word of the gangster part. Mm-hmm. He is a drug dealer. Mm-hmm. He was a drug dealer that, if I could say, you know, allegedly, would rob other drug dealers. Allegedly. And he wanted to get out of that life. I knew him differently, you know what I mean? He was real humble when he came and talked to me. I never felt threatened. My second-born daughter, he would hold her as a baby, as an infant. She was born. And she was just comfortable in his arms, and he would turn into a completely different person. Mm-hmm. It was weird. You see a big, tough, you know, black dude, you know what I'm saying, with the perm and mm-hmm. big mm-hmm. arms and everything else, and then he holds this baby and it just turns into mush. You know what I mean? It was amazing. And it was beautiful, and I loved him for that, man, because I saw the softer side of him. I was never scared of this dude. A lot of people were, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but he was a real nice guy. Unfortunately, he reminded me of my stepbrother. My stepbrother, Will Rob Steele, and all these kind of things, and you know he was on drugs and everything. But me, growing up, I remember him as a good brother and teaching me how to ride a bike. And teaching me how to fix cars, build go-karts, that kind of stuff. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Just he was every sense of he was a good brother.
And Gangsta
Earn had that same thing. We would talk about different things, not just you know the other stuff. I didn't talk about any of that hood stuff or whatever. We would just talk about just regular stuff. His kids. You know, his wife, you know what I mean? His mm-hmm. girlfriends, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. Right. So he was a good guy.
Oof. So I think Earn passed away in like 1992, I think.
Sounds about right. I think he's definitely one of those artists that, you know, he casts a long shadow. He definitely has that charisma, kind of legacy, you know, that the greats have, man. You know, Tupac and... Biggie Smalls, those kind of individuals. You know what I mean? He's still mentioned. He's still respected. You know, it's over 30 years later, and he doesn't have a discography that's, you know, necessarily really, really big. You know, but still, he's considered, you know, one of the legends. You know?
Oof, I know he was on Break Mine Off Records, and it was a couple of different acts. I know DBX was a part of that Gills group, but after he passes, the big group that's left is Boot Without a Soul, which is kind of like Backpack. And I'm wondering if that kind of left a hole or a vacuum that left a space for them to kind of springboard into it. Yeah, what do you think on that?
It definitely makes sense. It you know, when you think about when larger artists, the acts, you know, when Tupac passed away, right? You know, the kind of violence, you know, it kind of steered the music in a different direction, you know. And even after Biggie Smalls, you know, that same kind of deal, you know, there was it was a little bit more lighthearted, you know. And maybe that same kind of thing happened locally, and that you know, Gangsta Earnest's passing just opened up maybe another lane for a different kind of sound, feel, vibe, you know, something like that. So that would make a lot of sense.
Was there like a Backpack element at that time?
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
The Backpack element was, I don't know if you heard a group called Boot Without a Soul?
Yes.
With the rapper Orko?
Yes.
I actually was one of their producers too.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
I don't know if you buried the lead on this one.
Yeah.
From Meridian Arts and KPBS, this is episode 3 of Rap Diego, a San Diego story. Our next episode steps into the 90s.
92. Hip hop got really big in San Diego. And I'm talking about B-boys, MCs, graffiti artists, skateboarders, DJs, the whole shot.
And we're introduced to one of the most important figures in our story.
Uncle the Psychotic Alien.
Rap Diego is a co-production of KPBS and Meridian Arts. Host and co-creator, Parker Edison. Episodes written by Jay Smith, Chris Reyes, Don Jagger, and Stephen Flex. Extra special thanks to guest writer Melody Harold. Editing by Platform Collection. Music soundtrack by Monday Adams. Executive producer for KPBS is Lisa Jane Morissette, KPBS Director of Audio Programming and Operations. Technical and operational support provided by KPBS technical producer, sound designer, Adrian Villalobos, and KPBS producer, Julio Ortiz Franco. This programming is made possible in part by the KPBS Explore Content Fund. Shout outs in no particular order to Prime Suspect, Bulldog, Demo Records, The Green Eyes, Dago Crush Militia, Break Mine Off, and Low Profile Records.
What up, podcast people? It's your favorite disc jockey, DJ Eddie, on the radio, playing the songs you're hearing about. Here's one from 1992. This is Up Against It by Gangsta Earn.
Here I am, I'm on the third row once again. Listen to the ooh, everyone's trying to send me to the pen. Punk said I'm 187 to suck. Spill a game to the devils, I killed the mother. All 12 looking at me with a rope in their mind. And I know they kind. They ready to break mine off with the quickness. I'm ready to break theirs off with the swift.
Oh, that's right.
Look around, 1-2, I'm about to hear ease. Up on my fucking ass about to chill. Hope these fools, cause you won't see me later.
Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.